Bullet ripped through the breastplate and eviscerated both lungs before exiting out the back, removing an even larger chunk of flesh on the way out. Reese had been so focused on eliminating the base element and had thrown the bolt so fast that he hadn't even noticed the flares start going up to his left. When his team's suppressed shots began penetrating the night air, Reese could tell the plan was working. They'd turned night into day. All they had to do was just not miss. If the Russians survived the initial onslaught, they would be back on top with their nods and lasers. Reese's team would get only one chance. He'd seen five figures in prone when his first flare had illuminated the landscape. "How many have my team sent up?" "Don't worry about them right now. Do your job." Reese reached for the flare gun, grabbed his second and last round from its rail, and broke the action, only to find the spent shell didn't eject on its own. Grabbing it with his numb fingers, he pulled it from the gun, fumbled, and dropped his last flare into the abyss. Chapter 76. Vasilyevich and the last living member of his base element rolled out of what they quickly recognized as a kill zone. Whoever was shooting at them was good. In 3 or 4 seconds, he'd taken out more than half his force. Luckily, the Wagner Group team leader still had his sniper.
"How many flares did they have?"
Recognizing that the tables had turned, Vasilyevich focused his attention on the cliffs to the northeast from behind the boulder before him and motioned to his sniper.
"The cliffs! He's in the cliffs!" he hissed.
The sniper had been set up to shoot down on the approaching force from the high ground and had moved from a prone to a sitting position that would allow him to find his new target in the cliffs above. The night optic was good, but at a distance it was almost impossible to discern an unmoving camouflaged figure from the jagged mountainside.
"There!"
Vasilyevich saw a slight movement against a still backdrop.
500 meters, halfway up the rocks,"
he yelled at the sniper to make sure he knew where to shoot. Vasilyevich directed his M4 at his new target, lasers dancing in and around the location of the movement, and began to fire. Reese's heart sank as his final flare dropped out of sight, bouncing off the rock face and falling into the darkness below.
"Shit! My teammates are counting on me. Think, Reese. Adapt!"
He saw the muzzle flashes. With suppressors, they were not as prominent as they would have been without them, but they were enough for Reese to make them out in the darkness. He thought back to the early days in Afghanistan, the automatic weapons gunners shooting unsuppressed at an entrenched enemy position. He remembered the Al-Qaeda guns turning toward the bright flashes of light at the breaks of the 5.56 and 7.62 machine guns. The man's head to his right, exploding. Reese knew he should change positions after his first shots, especially since he had now lost the element of surprise and the enemy had him zeroed, but he stayed where he was. What he suspected was that the enemy's IR lasers had been sighted in for a range of 25 yards to a point of aim, point of impact, a cardinal sin. In simple terms, it meant that the lasers would hit what they were aiming at if that target was at 25 yards. He also knew they had a sniper with them. The single round that had impacted him in the body armor had not come from a 5.56 weapon system. If the sniper already had him in his sights, he was a dead man.
Observe, orient, decide, act.
Settling back in behind his rifle, Reese took a breath and exhaled. He saw the full auto muzzle flash from the suppressed M4 and noted its ineffective hits to his left. He was looking for the sniper. Reese knew he had an advantage. He'd already put targets down and was perfectly dialed for the distance, angle, and elevation, and he knew the wind hold. His antagonist would be taking all those factors into consideration, but had yet to confirm it with a shot. If the Russian sniper missed, he'd make the correction and would not miss again. A single flash, 3 meters to the full auto gun's left, registered in Reese's brain. He estimated back from that flash where the shooter's head would be on the stock of a long-range rifle and pressed the trigger. Vasilyevich heard the report of the large-caliber weapon reverberate off the canyon walls and saw the muzzle flash just as his sniper's head snapped back and away from his Shukhavin, his body collapsing in an unnatural heap. Without looking back up at the cliff, Vasilyevich pushed himself to his feet and retreated into the darkness. Chapter 77. The snow crunched beneath his feet, his nods fogging up from the exertion. He stumbled, fell, got back up, and pressed onward. If only he could make it to the lodge. Vasilyevich's frantic radio calls went unanswered. Sergei never used radios. He despised all trappings of the modern world, and the director was on the hunt, focused on his newest acquisition, the American whose sister he'd killed days earlier.
What was that?
The distinctive sound of Mikhail Kalashnikov's revolutionary invention echoed through the forest. It was too far away to be directed at him.
Was it possible one of his men had survived the encounter?
His contractors carried M4s.
Who on the island had an AK?
Then he heard it again. And again. Then it hit him. The Americans were putting AK rounds into the dead bodies of his men. Now Vasilyevich knew what it was to be hunted. His force had been defeated by the Americans. He'd become too comfortable with the night vision and lasers, knowing their adversary wouldn't have the advantage of technology after being hit with the EMP. He'd become overconfident, on home soil with the advantage of surprise and the technical superiority of owning the night. The Americans had made them pay for their hubris. He knew they had taken his forces' helmets and night vision, probably their snowshoes and weapons with IR lasers as well. If only he could get to the relative safety of Alexander's compound, he could contact the Russian military across the bay at Petropavlovsk-Kamchatsky or Avacha Bay and request reinforcements. With the weapons in the lodge, he, Alexander, and Sergei could hold off the invaders until help arrived. Stopping to catch his breath, Vasilyevich nervously scanned the path behind him. He'd be easy to track in the snow. And with early nautical twilight not far off, his pursuers would be able to pick up their pace. He closed his eyes, held his breath, and listened.
There. They were coming. Keep going. Get to the lodge.
Reese and his team charged through the snow, now outfitted in the snowshoes, helmets, rifles, and nods of their enemy. Reese had warned them that the IR lasers were probably sighted in point of aim, point of impact, at 25 yards, so anything past that distance would be dicey. Devin had his eyes on Ido, who pushed forward on the track of their quarry. Reese took point and had his eyes up and out, looking for threats. It was clear that the Russian was moving toward the lodge, probably to sound the alarm and warn Alexander of the approaching hit team. Reese was intent on him not making it. Devin threw up his left hand, signaling the patrol to stop. He'd seen Ido change his behavior. They were close. Not wanting to walk into another ambush, Reese gave the hand and arm signal for the two trail SEALs to punch out to the right. Farkas and Chavez would move out and ahead to flank their target, putting him in an L ambush and sealing his fate. Reese and Devin waited, quiet and listening for any changes in the environment. Eli took rear security. They'd give their flanking element a solid 5 minutes, and then it would be time for Ido to go to work. They'd caught up quicker than Vasilyevich had anticipated.
How many were there?
The Russian knew he would never make it to the lodge in time. He would have to outthink them. His plan was a long shot, but one that just might pay off. With a dog on his track, he'd double back, circling around and run parallel to them, closing the distance while moving in the opposite direction. essentially doing a large U-turn. The dog's nose would be on the track. If he could make the move before his pursuers noticed he was veering to his right, he just might have a chance. The tubes on these particular nods were not the best for peripheral vision. It was like looking through two toilet paper tubes. Everything within those tubes was lit up in hues of green, white, and black. To see right or left, his head had to physically turn in those directions. He hoped that because they were exerting themselves to catch him before he got to the lodge, they would be too focused on making time through the snow rather than on the possibility their prey might be trying to outwit them with such a risky maneuver. By the time they figured out he was not going for the lodge, he'd have the drop on them. The two Americans and the lone Russian saw each other at the same time. Farkas was in the lead. His weapon came up quickly as he took the safety off, finger to trigger, but not fast enough for the Russian coming directly for him, who dove into his first available cover. "Contact front!" Farkas yelled to Chavez, who immediately joined him online, both operators melting into the closest trees to evaluate the situation.
"He was doubling back on us," Farkas said, now in a hushed voice.
"You keep him pinned," Chavez said. "I'm going to punch right. Let's finish this guy."
"Roger," Farkas confirmed.
"Moving," Chavez said.
"Move."
Before he could take a step, a Russian F-1 hand grenade landed in the snow, just shy of his cover. Reese, Devon, and Eli heard the explosion.
"Shit, he was doubling back on us," Reese exclaimed.
"Oldest trick in the book," the former SEAL commander thought. "Should have anticipated that."
"Send him," Reese ordered.
Without a second thought, Devon said, "Fass," German for bite, and Ito charged toward the enemy. Vasilyevich angled his head out from behind the tree. He could see that both Americans were down but still moving. He'd finish them and then sprint toward the lodge. The snowshoes were a bit cumbersome, but his remaining pursuers would have the same issue, and they just might proceed more cautiously now that he'd shown them he could exploit his tactical advantages just as well as they could. He was just getting to his feet when it felt like he was hit in the side with a sledgehammer. Ito had been born and bred for this very task. While some dogs longed to chase tennis balls or retrieve ducks, Ito wanted nothing more than to kill terrorists. Though this one didn't smell or taste the way the ones had on his past trips to the warmer places with the one they called Devon, he knew this was his target. His job was to destroy the man before him, and Ito knew how to do just that. Reese, Eli, and Devon were within 20 yards when they finally had a clear line of sight to the struggle between man and beast. They saw the Russian make a move to draw something from his waistline. Gun or knife, it didn't matter. Three lasers found his head, the warriors depressing their triggers in the same instant, each sending deadly projectiles into the brainstem of their target, who dropped straight into the snow.
"Here,"
Devon ordered, bringing Ito back to his master as Eli moved to the two downed SEALs. Chavez was getting up, just a little dazed from the blast.
"You okay, buddy?"
Reese asked, looking in his eyes and then doing a once-over of his body to ensure he still had all his fingers and toes.
"I'm good. Snow tamped the majority of the blast, but Farkas was closer. I'll go take care of our plausible deniability," he said,
unslinging the AK from his back and walking toward what was left of the dead Russian. Eli was stuffing a wound on Farkas's upper leg with gauze below a tourniquet. Even through his nods, Reese could tell it was a bad one. Farkas was conscious and gritting his teeth to stay quiet.
"Farkas, you are going to make it. That shrapnel missed your arteries, so it's not an arterial bleed. You have a bunch of small shards of shrapnel in there. It just hurts like hell."
"Take these," Eli said, handing the wounded SEAL a handful of pills.
"They will ward off infection, and we'll have you out of here and back to an ER in Alaska before they wear off."
While Eli practiced medicine, Reese reached into Farkas's pack and pulled out the small Kifaru Wubi, a 21st century private sector version of the venerable military poncho liner. He extracted it from its small built-in stuff sack, and wrapped it around the wounded frogman. Next, he pulled out the Sitka Gear flash shelter and wrapped that around the puffy poncho liner.
"This isn't perfect, but it will keep you from freezing to death out here. We'll be back. I need everybody for this assault. The lodge is just a click east."
Reese thought of Hannah and Rafe. Though he hated to do it, he was not going to be able to leave a member of the team behind to tend to Farkas. If they failed, Farkas was a dead man, if not from the Russian military assets that would descend on the island, then from the freezing temperatures of Medni and the infections that were bound to set in as soon as the antibiotics wore off.
"Crush them, sir. Don't worry about me. I have rear security," he said, holding up his rifle.
Reese nodded. The other members of the assault force were primed to execute, the familiar look of resolve on their faces. Before storming on toward the target, Reese looked down at the smallest member of the team, the multipurpose canine who had saved his life yet again. The dog was chewing on something. It was a chunk of Captain Karyavin Vasilyevich's triceps.
Chapter 78. Rafe moved toward high ground, faster now that the sun was about to break the horizon.
Was Reese really on his way to Russia? Or was it just another one of Zhakov's sick mind games?
The image of his sister's dismembered head floating in formaldehyde burned in his mind, the hate keeping him warm. He squeezed himself into a rock outcropping and surveyed the terrain behind him. Weather was coming in off the Bering Sea. That might work to his advantage. He squinted back the way he had come and could just make out the monstrous 6x6 vehicle pushing through the tundra and snow, slowly gaining elevation in the early morning light. A snowmobile with a single skid in front followed a short distance behind. He knew he had been easy to follow. Now it was time to bait a trap of his own. He looked over the snow-strewn cliffs to the jagged rocks that met the sea at their base, and then carefully backtracked out the way he had come. Alexander brought the Kamaz troop transport to a stop, the tracks in front of him moving toward the very same cliffs where the sister had met her fate. Shaking his head, he grabbed his Raven crossbow from the seat beside him. Sergei and the dogs would deal with anyone who survived his contractors well before they made it to this elevation. He wanted to test himself on this hunt. He'd only bring the dogs up as a last resort.
"What tricks do you have up your sleeve?"
Alexander swung down from the off-road vehicle's lowest step and detached his snowshoes, feeling excitement building inside him.
"Finally, a worthy adversary."
Alexander ran his tongue along his upper lip, his eyes tracing the footsteps through the snow.
"Don't make this easy on me, Rainsford."
He cocked his crossbow and inserted a bolt into the flight groove of his weapon before stepping off into the snow in search of his prey. Chapter 79. With Farkas out of the fight, the assault team now consisted of four seasoned operators and a dog. They would usually hit a compound like this with 40 assaulters, air assets, a blocking force, and a QRF on standby. On the plus side, Reese didn't have some Remph squawking questions in his ear from back at the Tactical Operations Center. Eli had maneuvered to the back of the building to catch any squirters who might head for the hills during the assault. As the most valuable member of the team with medical skills rivaling any ER doctor, keeping him out of the initial entry was the smart call. Reese noted the surprising lack of security as they approached the entrance under cover of darkness. Was it possible the intel was correct, and the security element they'd eliminated were the only ones on the island? The 10 dead contractors would fit with the numbers from the agency target package. Still, Reese had grown skeptical of all intel that was not generated at the tactical level. They stacked on the door and Chavez took point, finger on the trigger, off-safe, with Devon